The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to First Take. Huge congrats to Laker Nation. I'm Molly Crudup, as usual, Key, Max, Stephen A. Guys, but let's focus on LeBron James. Put some respect on that man's name. King James, talk to me.
I told Jeannie when I came here that I was going to put this franchise back in a position where it belongs. Her late great father did it for so many years, and she just, you know, took it on after that. And for me to be a part of such a historical franchise is it's an unbelievable feeling, not only for myself, but for my teammates, for the organization, for the coaches, for the trainers, everybody that's here. We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
Hey, Stephen A., this title run started 1 year ago. Is this LeBron's most challenging title?
I would say yes, but it's not because of what transpired on the basketball court. Obviously, it extends far beyond that. When you consider the conditions under which these guys had to deal with, to have the season halted, to take a four-month hiatus, to come back when guys, even his team in the Los Angeles Clippers, voted not to come back, then to be in the bubble, and then to have the shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin, take place. And prior to that, obviously, Breonna Taylor was on everybody's mind. George Floyd was on everybody's mind. And then you wondered whether or not the season was going to be ongoing. And then they had those meetings, and guys were talking about how, you know what, the hell with it. Essentially, you know what, if the season needs to be halted, it needs to be halted. And you had all of that stuff going on. To continue to thrive the way that he thrived, to perform the way that he performed, to be as dominant as he was throughout these playoffs. He clearly put the world on notice that the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo did not deserve to be the league MVP. He deserved it. He got my vote. I was one of the 16 people that voted for him. Others voted against him. But also he came into the playoffs and took Portland out in five. Obviously did what he needed to do against Houston, ultimately did what he needed to do against Denver, and then obviously, of course, the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals. He was absolutely sensational. He averaged, 29, 11, and 8 in the finals on shooting 59% from the field, 41.7% from three-point range. That's nothing short of sensational, and when you consider all the things that were going on to distract folks from actually playing basketball, but yet and still we saw the high level of competition that we witnessed from these guys going against each other, knowing that if you lost, you get to go home, which most of them said they wanted to do anyway. Yet when they got on the court, they didn't play like it. We had some very scintillating basketball over the last 3 months or so. It was high-end competition. And at the end of the day, the king was crowned, and it happened to be LeBron James yet again. You got to tip your cap to him. He's worthy of NBA Finals MVP, and I think that because of all the conditions and everything that came with it, I think a legitimate argument can be made that this was the toughest one.
And you're making it. I co-sign everything you said, but I would not call this his most difficult championship. First of all, if the best player in the world is playing with another, which LeBron is playing with another top five MVP caliber player in the history of basketball, that team almost always wins the championship. That's the first thing. That's what LeBron had. And Pelinka deserves a lot of credit. I was highly critical of some of the moves he made in the offseason. They worked out. They found diamonds in the rough. They put the right team together. Secondly, if everyone is playing under the same circumstances, then it's not harder in that sense for anyone, since it's harder for everyone, right? So that balances out. I understand it's more taxing for everyone involved, but it doesn't make it more difficult to win the championship because everyone's dealing with those circumstances. Second thing. Third thing, when LeBron James played the 73-win Warrior team and came back down 3-1, I don't want to hear about Draymond Green got suspended. LeBron kind of instigated that. Good for him. He was smart, stuck out his leg and goaded him, knowing that one more tech would be all it took. Coming back against the 73-win team, which was about to be crowned the greatest basketball team ever, on the road, when defensively you didn't give up a field goal, a point in the last almost 5 minutes of the game to the greatest half-court offense ever. When LeBron iced the game on the free throw line, which he'd been, you know, criticized for, he didn't want to take those last second free throws. That was the greatest, most difficult championship of LeBron James' amazing career, because he's had several of them that could be in this category. I'll say this. They went 4-1, 4-1, 4-1 against the West, 4-2 against the Eastern Conference opponent. Remember all those seasons we were all saying, man, if LeBron was in the West, it wouldn't be this easy. And look, the Warriors obviously weren't around this year because of all the injuries and some defections, but it seemed like the Nuggets looked pretty good against the Clippers. I mean, they played some pretty good teams, some kind of scrappy teams that against a lesser team, maybe a non-LeBron James-led team, those scrappy teams where they're making those fourth quarter runs, maybe those win, they win some of those games. Maybe that changes the series. But they didn't, because LeBron James wouldn't let it. It is among his greatest accomplishments this year. I would not put it at the very top, even considering his age, which gives him extra credit for this. But it's up there, but I would still say the win against the 73-win Warriors down 3-1 at Oracle is still his crowning achievement.
Well, I think it's a matter of opinion, obviously. We have an opinionated show. We get all of that. But I think that a legitimate argument can be made on both ends. My position is, and I've been consistent on this, I thought it was a stimulus package that was handed to LeBron James by the NBA when Draymond Green got suspended for that game five. Keep in mind that the Cleveland Cavaliers had lost game four in Cleveland and were down 3-1 as a result and heading back to the Oracle. When they headed back to the Oracle and they had to go without Draymond Green, then the back spasms from Andre Iguodala kicked in that game. Andrew Bogut got hurt that game. And on top of it all, Steph Curry wasn't healthy. So we can look at it at 3-1, and it's an incredible accomplishment, no doubt. But there were some mitigating circumstances that can't be ignored. Then when you combine that with what they had to go through here and how you had such disruption, people not wanting to play, folks arguing with one another, dudes wanting to go home, worried about people violating the bubble, wondering whether or not there was going to be a positive test and all of this other stuff because of the coronavirus pandemic. Again, it's not just about what you do on the court. It's what leads to you getting on the court as well. Those obstacles, those distractions is what I think makes it a bit tougher in my estimation. And that's why I give credit where credit is due.
And I'm going to have to follow you up with that one, Stephen A., to say that when you look at it, let's not just talk about the championship. Let's start a year ago. Let's start in China. Let's start with LeBron having to answer those questions, and then fast forward to the death of Kobe Bryant, then the pandemic, and then the unrest in the country, then getting in the bubble, then opting out of the bubble for a couple of days to try to figure out what they wanted to do, then clinching the division in the number one seed and kind of relaxing a little bit, and then starting off losing that first game to Portland, and then Denver, and then having a 3-1 closeout game right in their hands, and then going to 3-2 and saying to themselves, uh-oh. And they said it themselves that this getting to 3-2 was scary, because all of a sudden you're at 3-1. You're like, oh, okay, we rolling. It's over with. It's a wrap. Now you're at 3-2. Things get real tight and stressful. That's one of the reasons that LeBron James walks off the court with 10 seconds to go. Not because he didn't want to shake hands. It's because he realizes at this moment they have to deliver and get it taken care of. When he came to L.A., he came to L.A. to win a championship. He didn't come to L.A. just to drive around in the sun. It's about winning a championship. It's about doing the things that the Laker fan base wanted. He said it himself the other day. He will not be accepted by Laker Nation until he delivers. Well, he delivered last night, so.
Is he accepted?
Yeah, 100%, Molly. Yeah. Oh, 100% he's accepted. In order to get the statue, he has to get two, though. Two.
Okay.
One's not going to get him
a statue. But he's got the acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be on the Lakers' Mount Rushmore, you need three to even be in the conversation.
Hello.
It is tough.
Yeah. Hello. Even with two, I don't think he deserves a statue.
Stephen, it depends on how he gets that two.
What I mean is this. I think that statues should be reserved. First of all, I don't like it. I don't like human beings deified like that. But for the sake of this discussion, let me be clear. I think the only way you deserve that is when you know what you're a light for with an organization, not when you show up for the party, you know, about an hour before it ends, per se. I mean, when you talk about Kobe, that's 20 years. When you talk about Shaq, look at all of those years. And the three-peat. When you talk about, and listen, I don't know why Oscar De La Hoya has a statue outside the Staples Center. And Max, he was a great champion. I love Oscar De La Hoya. But what the hell is he doing with a statue outside of the Staples Center when most of his fights were in Vegas?
That's great.
I don't know about that.
Maybe we think about it.
No, he's from that area. I know he's from LA, but still.
Maybe we think about it with two, three for sure. Three for sure. If he can get us three in the next, if we can win another two in the next four years,
yeah. Hey, I'll call the brass at Bristol because I understand they were working on your statue right outside the
headquarters. I don't want a statue.
Stephen A's against
it. I don't want a statue. You don't want to be deified. You don't want a statue. You don't like
give me,
a lot of
give
noise
me check.
Surrounding your name.
Give me
you
the
like
check.
To lay low. I get it now.
Give me the check. I don't need a statue. The check
from
will do.
From what I understand, you secured the bag, so I think you're good in that department.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take pod. Have a fabulous day.
The Cowboys' Dak Prescott underwent surgery after a gruesome ankle injury versus the Giants. The team said Prescott has a right ankle compound fracture and dislocation. His surgery was successfully completed Sunday night. He's expected to be released from the hospital today. He was hurt while being tackled during a run in the third quarter. Veteran Andy Dalton takes over for Dallas. Here's reaction from Zeke and head coach Mike McCarthy.
I know we won, but it just sucks to lose Dak, our leader. I was talking to the guys. It's going to take all of us. It's going to take all of us to fill that void that we're going to be missing from four. And we just got to go out there and play for him.
He was having a tremendous year. Just, you know, in my short time working with him, he's made such an impression on me. And he's, you know, clearly the leader of this football team. I have no doubt that he'll bounce back from this.
Dak's older brother Tad tweeting this: God is good. He'll be back stronger than ever. I guarantee it. Let's go, Dak. Continue to walk by faith. I'll make sure you continue to fight. This has been a very challenging year for Dak and Tad, to say the least. Their middle brother Jace took his life back in April. Since, Dak has opened up about suffering from depression and anxiety he's experienced, rightfully so, with that tragic loss. Jerry Jones releasing this statement: we are all heartbroken for Dak and this very disappointing injury. I know this young man very well. I know the personal hardship and strife that he has faced, dealt with, and overcome in his life. And I know no one who is more prepared from the perspective of mental and emotional toughness and determination than Dak Prescott to respond and recover from the challenge that has been put in front of him. He is an inspiration to everyone he touches. He has all of our love and support, and we have no doubt that he will return to the position of leadership and purpose that he brings to our team. Former Cowboy Keyshawn Johnson still here with us. Stephen A., I'll start with you, though. What does this mean for Dak and the Cowboys?
Well, it means that Dak Prescott's future is up in the air, and that means the Dallas Cowboys' future is up in the air. You know, I have to admit that I'm really not interested in talking about the Cowboys. I'm interested in talking about Jerry Jones because I'm not going to lie to you. I'm pretty pissed off. I'm very, very sad for Dak Prescott. It's not my future. It's not my money. It's not my contract, but it feels personal to me, and I'm going to tell you why. Max knows this, Keyshawn. I've said this on many occasions. Max and Molly know this. Dak Prescott is playing under a one-year franchise tag of $31.4 million. I have said this on countless occasions, and I'm going to say it again. If Tony Romo was in this position, Tony Romo would have had a long-term contract. And somehow, some way, Jerry Jones still has never explained the lack of justification or the justification for not signing Dak Prescott long-term. And to me, I just think that this just completely stinks. It really, really does. And I'm going to tell you why. I want to remind everybody, Max and Molly and Keyshawn, the year is 2013. Tony Romo is 32 years old at the time. Tony Romo receives a contract for $108 million, a $55 million signing bonus, and $55 million guaranteed and a $25 million signing bonus. At age 32, with one career playoff victory on his resume. And let me read you a quote that Jerry Jones said at that particular moment in time, if I can find it. He's talking about, we are very confident in this investment and commitment. But Dak Prescott is considerably younger. Dak Prescott has a better completion percentage. He has a better touchdown to turnover ratio. He wins just as many of his games as Tony Romo was winning at the time. Already in his short career, all right, he already has his one playoff victory that Tony Romo had at the time. But somehow, some way, Dak Prescott can't get a long-term deal. Now, I know that Jerry Jones is like, or the Dallas Cowboys, reportedly, because one of the things that I lamented with all of these astute aficionados and big-time insiders, nobody could definitively tell us what the hell a hangup was. And then we learned, oh, Jerry Jones wants to lock him in for 5 years. Dak Prescott only wants to sign for 4 years. Would that have stopped you from signing Tony Romo? Would that have stopped you from taking care of him? Would that have stopped you from ensuring that an incident like yesterday with Dak Prescott takes place, and instead with Tony Romo, where his future would have been set? Now Dak Prescott's up in the air. We get to sit back and just say, okay, Jerry Jones has thrown all of these laudables in his way. He's a Dallas Cowboy. We're going to take care of him. All the love and support is here. But his contract still expires this year. And then you get to franchise him next year. And he'll be on a one-year deal again. And oh, by the way, now he's got to come back with something to prove. Got to prove he's healthy. Got to prove his durability is still not going to be a question. And as a result, maybe then he'll get his money. But when that wasn't a question, you wouldn't commit to him long-term unless it was longer than he wanted it. This stinks. It's messed up. And it's a damn shame that Dak Prescott has to be in this position. I know he's still getting his $31.4 million. I know he'll probably get more than that with the franchise tag next year. But at a time 7 years ago, when Tony Romo was getting paid nine figures, his durability was a question mark, and he wasn't winning any more than Dak was. Somehow, some way, he's taken care of, and Dak Prescott is in this position. Jerry Jones, I'm sure you're proud. Brilliant business move. I'm sure you're proud.
It was a good business move, as it turned out. It was an accidentally good business move. And you and I totally disagree about this, Stephen A. Let me start by saying, what a tough couple years Dak Prescott has had personally. It's all kinds of messed up. And for anyone out there thinking, oh, he's got that $30 million contract, believe me, he'd give that $30 million back to have his brother back, right? Like this, I don't wish the last couple years on an enemy, what Dak has had to go through. So my thoughts are with him and his family, and I hope he's doing okay even before this latest thing happened. I want to make that very clear, rooting for Dak Prescott. Stephen A., I disagree with you about the Romo stuff only because they offered him an enormous deal, over $100 million. Dak turned it down for whatever reason. It's not the Cowboys' responsibility to make sure that Dak accepts a $100 million plus offer. Dak's got to sign that. And I understand he thought he could do even better. But there's risk involved when you try to do even better. in a full contact sport, it's injury risk. And he took that risk, and so far it didn't work out. Now, maybe he comes back from this, and they sign him to a short-term deal, like, let me see that you're still good, and he is still good, and he winds up making $30 million this year and some good amount next year, and then he gets his $100-plus million, and maybe he winds up an even better deal than he would have gotten because it's a new, CBA and all this stuff. Who knows? The bottom line is there's a $100 million-plus deal on the table. He didn't sign it. That's a risk. He took it, and this is what happened. And there's even a greater risk, I think, than maybe people are thinking, because Andy Dalton's pretty good. Like, he's not great, but he's pretty good. And the Cowboys do have some talent. And with Dak so far this year, remember, a lot of his value is wrapped up in he has a lot of ability, but also durability is one of his abilities, it seemed. And now with a catastrophic injury, maybe that goes away in people's minds. They have beaten the Falcons in a game they clearly should have lost. The Falcons had one of the great meltdowns mentally of all time to lose that game. We'll always remember it. And then the Giants, by the skin of their teeth, one of the worst NFL teams you can imagine, by the skin of their teeth. And Dalton winds up in at the end of the game. So Dak is in a bad position right now. It's not the end of the world. He can come back from this and have a great career, and I'm hoping he does. But it's really bad for Dak Prescott right now.
Here's what I would say. When you look at the contract situation with Dak Prescott, Max is right. They offered him somewhere in guaranteed money between $110 and $125 million over the 4 years of guaranteed money. They wanted to go out 5 years, whatever that fifth year was. You take that fifth year, if you're not any good, guess what they're going to do? They're going to cut you any damn way. And if you're really good, they're going to extend you like they do every other great quarterback in the National Football League. But I don't blame Dak Prescott. I don't blame the Dallas Cowboys. I blame his representatives. And I know you would say, how could you do that, Key? Because they probably told him to wait. They probably told him to sign it. He didn't want to sign it. You get him to sign it. You show him that risk that Max is talking about. Because when you are 27 years old, Stephen A., you know you don't look at risk the same as when you're 45. Or 42, or 50. It's totally different. I blame them for not getting him to understand you are in a contact sport. Anything could happen. Secure that bag now. Worry about it later for more money. You can't get on the internet and look at everybody else's salaries. You can't worry about what Russell Wilson makes, what Patrick Mahomes could eventually get. Patrick Mahomes' guaranteed money is $160 million. He won a Super Bowl. So they gave him a little bit of a cushion, gave him more money. That risk has now having you sit in the hospital and worry about whether or not the Dallas Cowboys are going to do the right thing with you in the future for your contract.
Well, listen, here's my point. We all have a right to give a damn what we give a damn about. I don't disagree with Max's point about Dak Prescott electing not to sign a contract and how that might not have been the smartest reason in the world, the smartest rationale in the world. And I don't disagree with your point about his agent, because you're absolutely right, Keyshawn. My point is a bigger point in my estimation. Again, if it were Tony Romo, somehow, some way, Jerry Jones would have found a way to get that done. I'm not talking about getting Tony Romo to settle for, I'm not talking about Tony Romo doing what Dak Prescott did, okay? I'm talking about Jerry Jones willing to capitulate. That's my issue here. Because what I just pointed out was this. In 2013, at age 32, with durability a question mark, winning damn sure a question mark, back then you made him the highest paid player in the history of the Cowboys. He ain't Irvin. He ain't Emmitt Smith. He ain't Troy Aikman. He ain't none of these people. He was Tony Romo, great commentator, phenomenal on television, calling football games. Don't get me started at what that black cat started when his behind was quarterback of the team. And this dude highest contract in the history of the franchise.
But did he
y'all didn't notice that?
I get all that, but did he buck Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys when they offered him the contract? Did he try to say,
I'm saying they never gave him an excuse to, and I can prove it, because at 32 years old, with questionable durability and not winning, he got $108 million.
We're going to have much more on this later. Wishing Dak a speedy recovery.
Calm down, Stephen A.
Sincerest condolences for the loss of his brother as well. Keyshawn, why have you? One word answer here. Monday Night Football, Saints, Chargers, who wins?
Man, Saints. Even though my nephew ain't playing Saints.
All right. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
As far as us offensively, we've kind of done it these last few weeks, obviously other than the Ravens game where we didn't execute at a high enough level to go out there and score like we've been known to score. And it caught up with us today. And so we got to go back and really look at ourselves in the mirror, me at quarterback, and really not rely on these crazy plays where I'm scrambling around and throwing these shots and just execute the offense the way that it's called and the way that we're supposed to be ran. And if we do that, we'll be a hard team to stop.
All right, the Chiefs suffering their first loss of the season to the Raiders. They are now 4-1. Max, Dan Orlovsky joining us. Dan, always good to have you,
our
quarterback in the building. Max, are the Chiefs too dependent on Mahomes? Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Now, when you say too dependent on, it's like, well, what do you want them to do? Not rely on their best player? No, of course you're going to be too dependent on Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. Of course, any team would be too dependent. This case, it means something different. Look, yesterday, he was not on the same page with his offensive line. They looked disjointed. That's why he references it after the game. And I don't know why that is. Dan can probably tell me, at, you know, when I'm done talking. Because, like, I remember Mitchell Schwartz was all NFL first. What was he first? He was first team all pro, right? Something like that, like a year or two ago. It seems like they have some talent on the offensive line. The defense hasn't been able to stop anybody this year. When you look 2 years ago, this is what the defense looked like in the beginning of the year. And then they got better and better as the year went on. And I thought good enough to win the Super Bowl. And I think they probably should have, if not for a pre-snap penalty against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. I think they would have won the Super Bowl. But then the following season, last year, they did win the Super Bowl. And how did they do it? A lot of Patrick Mahomes late game heroics, right? For sure. But a lot of the defense holding the other team right there when they needed to, like, I don't know, in the Super Bowl, right? The defense got much better last year from the year before where it had been improving, but really got a reworking. And it was a top third-ish defense last year. You got Patrick Mahomes in this offense in a top third-ish defense. It's a problem. But take that defense away, and yes, you're going to be too reliant on your superhero doing superhero things late in games. And that's what happened to the Chiefs yesterday. Now, I didn't think they were going to go undefeated. Divisional game, you lose, you know, another team's quarterback. Derek Carr had a great game, his best game in, I think, years probably. It's going to happen. I think they're going to lose again at least once this season, and I think they're going to win the Super Bowl. But so far, are they too reliant on Mahomes? Yes, I think they are.
Oh, please. That is ridiculous. I'm sorry, what the hell does he have to do other than throw the football? He's the quarterback. I'm too reliant on you to do your job. Your job is to throw the football. Travis Kelce's job is to catch the football. He caught 8 receptions for 108 yards on 12 targets yesterday. Tyreek Hill's job, catch the football. Mecole Hardman's job, catch the football. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, his job is to run the damn football. He averaged 4 yards a carry. I'm sorry, what the hell is the problem? What do you mean he said they're too reliant on him? They ain't asking him to run the football. They ain't asking him to play special teams. They ain't asking him to be a cornerback or a linebacker or rush the passer. Your job is to quarterback the damn team. You
stand behind center. You call play sent in by Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid. You drop back to pass. You flick it to one of those dudes. I'm sorry. I didn't think how is his job different than what Derek Carr's job was? Derek Carr outplayed him yesterday. Let's call it what it is. It won't happen often, but it's a rarity because Patrick Mahomes is that dude. But yesterday, he got outplayed because of Darren Waller, because of Henry Ruggs III with a 72-yard catch and a 46-yard catch, because of Josh Jacobs, because John Gruden and Mike Mayock are doing a hell of a job in Las Vegas. What happened is that they sat up there and watched a little film from Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots and what they did to neutralize the Kansas City Chiefs. And as a result, they didn't seem as potent as they normally do for most of the game. Their defense is ranked top 7. They're top 6 against the pass. They're 28th against the rush. But it's not like the Raiders were running all over them. Yesterday was a tough day. But I don't want to hear, oh, my goodness, you're asking this too much on Patrick Mahomes. You play quarterback. Any quarterback that played for the Kansas City Chiefs might not do it nearly as well as him, but their assignment, their actual job description would be the same. I stand behind center. I get the ball from the center. I drop back the pass. I throw it to the wide receiver over here or over there or the tight end here, or I hand it to the damn running back. And when nobody's open, I scramble. I'm sorry. I don't know any quarterback whose job description is different than that. So I don't want to hear that.
Stephen A., are you trying to simplify playing quarterback in the NFL?
No.
That's literally what you're doing.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that your job description is, I said your job description. There are some who do it better than others, but your job description is what it is, playing that position.
But you're saying the job description of throwing and quarterback are the same thing. That's not true. The reality is this, yes, they've become too dependent on Patrick Mahomes. If you just watch this game come out, like, the Chiefs have become drunk on the inexplicable. Like, Patrick makes these inexplicable plays, and they just become fascinated with it. The yeah, but is always there. Like, all right, we stink on first down and second down, but yeah, but Patrick's going to make a play. And they've become so reliant on that. Watching that football game yesterday, they're bad on first down, but Patrick will bail us out. They're bad on second down. Patrick is a bailout. We've got some injuries on our offensive line. Patrick is will bail us out. And you know what? That's a fair mindset for fans to think. But organizationally and play calling wise, it's a very slippery slope to just continue to believe 15 is going to get it done. Did he have his best game? No. Their offensive line did not play well. He drifted in the pocket. Here's the thing. He threw the ball 43 times. After I watched the tape, the Raiders rushed 4 or 3 guys in 40 of those snaps. 40 out of 43. They literally said, you're not going to be disciplined enough to run the ball against us, especially on first and second down. You think that you can throw it against anybody all the time. And we're going to bet that as long as our 4 rushers play strategy football and don't get too past Patrick Mahomes, that we're not going to allow those rushing lanes or move up lanes. And we're going to play better defense than you'll play offense. So, yes, they've become a little bit too reliant on Mahomes doing the things that doesn't even make sense.
And what would Max Kellerman and Dan Orlovsky would have nothing to do with that, huh? When you're sitting on the airways, oh, man, this guy's great. I mean, this guy's
he
fantastic.
This Max Kellerman. Things can be true.
Hold on. This is Max Kellerman. I've never seen anybody do this. I mean, I've never seen anybody do what I'm seeing Patrick Mahomes do. Excuse me. So Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy says, okay, I got Tyreek Hill. I got Mecole Hardman. I got Sammy Watkins. I got one of the top 2 I believe to be the best tight end in football in Travis Kelce. And I'm not going to throw
Stephen
the damn
A.
football.
You see, I mean, understand. Really? I see that you're listening to the things I say and the things that Dan says. And you're a careful listener. And you frequently bring it up. Oh, I hear what you say. And you try to use people's words against them. Sometimes they never even use the words, and you claim they did.
That's a lie.
However, in this case, I'd like to remind you of something. Stephen A., how many times have you been on the airways lamenting the fact that, say, the Green Bay Packers haven't done enough to surround Aaron Rodgers with weapons, or
many times years ago,
that the New Orleans Saints are too reliant on Drew Brees? Why don't they give him a defense, right? Like, you don't think that's going on right now a little bit with the Kansas City Chiefs, the way the defense has been playing, and they know they got an all-world Superman under center?
That's a disingenuous perspective to present to the American public. So allow me to retort. What I've done when I brought those things up is looking at a team spanning years and saying, damn, how many years are you going to put this guy in the same position and do nothing? Last time I checked, the Kansas City Chiefs are the reigning, defending Super Bowl champions, playing game five of their defense of their crown in this 2020 season. That's the last time I checked when I said that about Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers ain't won a Super Bowl since 2010. Drew Brees ain't won a Super Bowl since 2009. And you continue to give them the same situations and conditions and personnel to play with. That's what I said in the past. That's entirely different than this.
2 years ago, the Chiefs were too reliant on Mahomes. The defense wasn't good enough. Last year, they got a better defense. They weren't overly reliant on Mahomes. And this year resembles more like 2 years ago to me so far than last year. That's fair.
And Stephen A. Stephen A., let me make this point, because you bring up the coaches and you're like, oh, well, they have so many weapons that they should throw the ball every play. That's your job as a coach. You literally just said you expect them not to throw the ball because they have Tyreek Hill.
I didn't say every play. That's their job, on your Stephen part. A. I didn't say every play.
Their job as a coach isn't to sit there and go, well, this is easy. We'll just throw the ball a ton because we got good players.
You weren't complaining about them last week. You didn't have that complaint last week. You didn't say
last
that
week
about
was a
them.
Different game, Stephen A. They were playing differently.
Game, one game that happens against the Las Vegas Raiders, and now he gets to come out and say, you know what, we get to come out and ask, are they too reliant on them after one damn game? When they win yesterday 4-0?
When teams show a trend of how they're going to play you defensively, and you not are adjusting to that trend by running the ball more and be more diligent on first and second down, then yes, it is our job to say that is too reliant on your quarterback's performance.
This is a much less affable Dan Orlovsky.
No, five games are a trend.
Much less affable jovial. Much
You're
less
wrong.
Shout out to you, L. Duncan. All right, Patrick Mahomes was pressured 28 times against the standard rush yesterday, most for any quarterback since 2006. You'll appreciate this, Dan. That's when I was still at UConn. We'll leave it there.
Go Huskies!
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.